always, stay in your homes. Stay in your homes.
Live from the Forbidden Book Group studio in Doppeltown, USA, it's Necronomapod with your hosts, Mike Stoffel and Mike Moncada, episode 153, Emil Ferris's My Favorite Thing is Monsters, the story of a little girl who thinks she's a monster and all the other monsters who love her. And now, a Necronomapod.
Military orders are subject to summary execution. Stay in your homes. Repeat, Comrade Channel. This is a Class 1 emergency. All civilian traffic is barred from streets and highways.
All right, so, hey.
Hey, here we are.
For the very first time again.
Full disclosure, we taped this once, but there was some...
There were some
recording
problems.
Issues that yep. I couldn't live with.
So we're going to do it again.
Very quickly.
Oh my God,
Mike, there was so much to edit out the last time too, because we had super long pauses and we were looking for things, and it was really hard to do all those edits.
I offered to do it a couple of times, but that's all right. That was before
everything happened.
That was before, yep. So anyway, hey, here we are. We're going to be talking about this lovely book, My Favorite Thing is Monsters, by Emil Ferris.
My favorite thing, too.
Yes. What do you remember about this book?
I remember that it is a graphic novel. That it is well-drawn.
Yes.
I remember that it's sort of drawn as a... kind of like how a kid would scribble in their notebooks in school.
Yeah, specifically the paper is like that high school, middle school, whatever notebook paper with the blue lines and the red line that goes up the marks the margin, and it even has three hole punches.
It does, and she's using different colored pens.
Yeah,
sometimes her art. Is very realistic, and sometimes it's kind of fanciful.
Yeah.
And she also does renderings of paintings in the museum in Chicago, the Art Institute.
Yeah.
So and she does those look awesome. Yeah. So
they're amazing. Yeah. So this book, it's a little bit out of our normal track of things that we read. We haven't done a graphic novel in quite some time, and never one quite like this.
No.
This is not manga. This is, American graphic novel, and it's not a comic book by any stretch. This is pretty serious, about some heavy stuff, about growing up, about coming out, about the freaking Holocaust, about death and grieving.
Being different.
And it does all those things, understands all those things by using the metaphor of the monster.
Right.
Which is kind of why we picked it.
Right. So how can we talk about the plot for this? Because there's an A plot and a B plot and a C plot.
Yeah, right? there's a number of plots. I would say let's talk about the A plot, which is our narrator, who is a 10, 11-year-old girl.
Yep.
Living in a single parent household
on the west side of Chicago.
On the west side of Chicago,
back in the USA. Back
I know.
In the bad old days.
Yeah, bad Leroy Brown is just down the street. But she's living there with her mother, and her older, much older. Well, yeah, significantly older brother. Her older brother is an interesting story. We'll get to him, and. But one of the things that's happening is that this young girl is trying to become a monster, specifically a werewolf, because she thinks that that will help solve some pretty big problems in her life. One of which is that she will be able to not care about other people because she feels like such an outcast, and will be able to be immune from their attacks. But also she'll be able to bite other people and make them immune from the attacks that are coming on to them in their lives.
Right, to protect them.
To protect them, yeah. Being a monster is protection. One of the things that's happening in her family is that her mother is sick. And by the end of this graphic novel, she has in fact died of cancer.
Right. And the other thing happening is that there's this murder. No, not a murder. There's a death in her building.
Yes.
And she thinks it's a murder, and she thinks her brother did it.
Yes. So one of the things that she does, besides trying to become a little werewolf monster, she also dons the clothing and the methods of a gumshoe, of a private detective. And so she's trying to, like, you know, spy on people, find clues, and find out what exactly happened to this neighbor. And before we go on to that, that's kind of the secondary plot. There's also her older brother, who is an artist.
Deez
has a lot of tattoos, which is not a big deal these days, but I think it was kind of a big deal in 1968, 69.
I don't know, the Illustrated Man, he had a lot of tattoos.
That was a big deal, though.
It wasn't usual.
It wasn't usual. And he is... He's a decent older brother, but he has problems with anger, and he's kind of
slipping and dipping his wick into too many bowls.
Yeah, he's a little promiscuous.
He's a horn dog.
He's a horn dog, and he's also flirting on the edges of the criminal world.
Right, he's kind of tough.
Yeah, he's kind of tough. So that's their family. And then we find out soon that one of the women that he has become comfy with is in fact the woman who has died in the apartment building.
And she's a Holocaust
survivor.
Yes.
So she's living there with her husband, who is a sort of a has-been jazz trumpeter. And she, Holocaust survivor. She's kind of wacky. She acts in strange ways. They find
her. She's drawn all in blue.
Yeah, she's always
her
drawn in
blue.
Skin
is blue.
Yeah, in fact, it's her face that's on the cover of this graphic novel, the one that's available. And by the end of the first sort of issue, this was published, she is dead. But it's weird because it's obvious that she died in one room, but her body is found in another.
Yep. So here's the thing. So that's the rough outline.
Yeah.
And there's so many things happening in this book that I am not going to be able to stitch together. I mean, it would take hours to stitch together everything that happened.
Yeah. It's very tightly plotted.
So what I would propose is, what if you picked out one of the things that happened that still strike you after, what, 3 weeks? Of
3 weeks now, yeah.
And I will pick out one that strikes me, and we can just, if you can remember that.
I do. I can still remember when we did this last. This is the moment in the book that struck me the most because it had an emotional impact. So throughout the book, our little narrator is always drawn as a little werewolf. She has this underbite with a couple of pointy teeth and a fuzzy face, and that's what she looks like, and that's how she sort of behaves. And you find out that her mother and her old auntie, the brother, are sort of humoring her, and letting her figuring that she's working through something is a phase, whatever. But as the plot moves along and things get more dire, Deez finds himself in more and more trouble, and our narrator is hurting. She knows that her mom is dying, and she's that's difficult to deal with, of course. What Deez does frequently throughout the book is take her to the Art Institute to show her art. And one point about two-thirds, three-quarters of the way through the this volume. They're coming back, and they're talking about, I can't even remember what, but they show Deez turns, takes the girl and makes her look in a glass door of a closed store. So it's, you know, it's black inside, and so it functions as a mirror and says, look at yourself. You look, what do you see? And what you see is what she sees, which is a little monster. And she says, no, you are not a werewolf. Look again. And finally, for the first time in the book, you see that she's just a little girl. And she sees herself as she really is, you know, kind of scared and frail and human and young and carrying a lot of crap. And for one moment, you get to see through her her defenses, which are necessary. And those defenses come back pretty quick. But for one moment, you get to see her as she is. It was very sweet and heartbreaking. So that was my moment. That was my moment.
So the moment that sticks out for me is, I mean, it wasn't really a whole, it wasn't really a moment, but the story of the woman who died, because the girl goes up to the neighbors and talks with the husband, and he has these tapes that the woman had made, kind of telling her story, and, you know, how she started off in a, her mother was in a brothel, and how she was kind of sold, how she survived the Holocaust, how she survived meeting really this people who are just monsters, basically.
Yeah.
And you get to hear that story, and you don't, and her story kind of ends where she's trying to barter her way out of going to a death camp. And you get the sense that she is going to start her own sort of brothel with young girls. And that's sort of the last time we hear a tape.
Mm-hmm.
So that still sticks out for me because it was kind of haunting. It's sad. And it really showed, you know, the monsters are humans.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We should mention at this point that this this book is volume one, that there is a second volume coming out of this book about a year from now, in September of 2021. So this book sort of wraps up, sort of. Some of the storylines...
That's where we argued last time.
Yeah,
it leaves us with a cliffhanger.
Yeah. The stories sort of taper off. They don't close. By no means does the story close. There are cliffhangers. There's but you know that reveal where you get to see her, that was sort of the rounding off of a loop.
Yeah, and she comes out after that. She admits to her brother that she likes girls, and
yeah, so that's like, you know, one of the C plots, D plots, whatever, is that, you know, she's she had a falling out with her best friend, who she would come over and they'd do sleepovers and watch scary movies. And they had these alter egos. She was a little werewolf and her best friend was a little vampire. The best friend got pulled into a group of, mean girls, basically. Sort of cut her out. And she feels that, I mean, she doesn't really talk about it much, but you can tell that hurts a lot. And they reconnect sort of by the end of this first volume.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another,
became 10-year-old lovers.
Yeah. Well,
whatever they are, she must be junior high or something.
Yeah.
But the other part of that, plot, that other B plot or C plot, is that as she's trying to solve this mystery of who killed the woman upstairs and she suspects her brother, we get the sense that her brother killed somebody else.
Yes, there's some
but
dark...
But it's not quite clear who it is. The mother has a scarf that has blood on it that she's been keeping for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know who it really belongs to, possibly somebody named Victor.
Yeah.
And we're kind of left with this cliffhanger that Victor is her brother because she kind of has a... What is it? A vision or whatever it is?
Yeah, something very strange happens in the narrative at the end, and you're not sure if it's in the narrative or it's a dream, a vision. who knows? And that's what we're going to have to wait to find out, apparently.
And it's kind of right after she realizes that the monsters are not going to protect her. Like, right. She sort of kills all the monsters kind of in her mind in some ways.
Yeah.
And she goes to this place that kind of reminds her of her mother, kind of internally.
Yeah.
This kind of this internal island or something. And that's where she kind of sees this Victor.
Right.
And he says, "I'm your brother." And that's the end. And he kind of looks like Deeves, but he kind of doesn't. And
I know, it's
very ambiguous.
This book has been out for a while, so people who, you know, finished this book when it came out, they had to wait like 3 years, or will have had to wait 3 years to find out, so that's a long time.
That's a long fucking time on a cliffhanger.
Totally.
So, do you... Well, okay, I'll just say, I don't think this book is horror. It uses horror as a backdrop.
Yeah.
It's not really...
Not really. It comes out of the same place that that I think yours and my love of horror comes out of, which is that fascination you have when you're that 10-year-old kid.
Right.
And my life back then was not a horror show. But I thought... I liked horror things, and this girl likes horror things more than I did, that's for sure. So much so that it's sort of guiding her perception of the world. But it's really about the world, and her world is a horror show, but in a very non-monstery way.
Right. Yeah, because the monsters are people.
Yeah, they're all and only people.
And, yeah, because I had that too, right? I was into... monsters, and they scared me and fascinated me at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. And
the classic monsters. And
yep,
I remember getting these comic books that were all sort of ghouls and vampires, and these, like, they were like weird tales. They were like scary stories of
like eerie
ghouls in cemeteries and stuff like that. And my parents, of course, were worried about
with good reason.
Well, when I was a kid, Dark Shadows had been hugely popular, like right at the peak, for me, like second, third grade, it was at peak. And so monsters were in the zeitgeist.
Yeah.
All the classic monsters kind of being revisited on daytime soap operas. And
that's right, because they bought them all into that show, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, they weren't. Yeah. There wasn't a Dracula, but there was a vampire.
Yeah,
there wasn't a Frankenstein, but there was a guy they put together called Adam, and there was a werewolf named Quentin, and there was a witch, Angelique, and there was ghosts, and there was all that stuff.
Was there a creature from some sort of black or you know, muddy lagoon?
I don't think there was. I don't remember that at all.
Too bad.
I don't know. I mean, the special effects were so awful. I don't even know if they could have pulled it off.
It was terrible. Yeah, no. I don't really remember that show. I remember it being on and it catching my attention. But I think it was late in the show's run. Because what did it run, like 4 years, 5 years?
Yeah, I want to say 4 years, maybe.
Yeah, something like
that.
Not long. But in the 90s, in the height of the VHS, go to Blockbuster, go to your local video store, boom. My local video store had the complete run of the show on VHS.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, shelves of them. And it was so funny. Every once in a while, you'd see, I still remember this. There was some kids with their parents. And they were so into it. And so they were there almost every day pulling off two or three more tapes because they were just binging out the entirety of Dark Shadows in the 90s. And I thought,
It was only a half hour.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the commercial, it was probably 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was, and even with that, it was the slowest moving soap opera in the world.
It was sepulchral. I wonder if this just occurred to me. I wonder, you know, time is moving forward in our graphic novel here. And Dark Shadows started airing in what, 1970, 71?
Was it in 71? No, I would have been third grade. That would have been 10. Yeah, maybe 71.
Yeah, so it's possible that that might get written into this graphic novel in the second volume. Possibly.
Well, I mean, it was the thing that was the monster thing of the time.
Yeah.
It was before Jaws and The Exorcist, yep, and
all of that. Yeah. And the Deez undergoes a specific hairstyle change late in this book. In the beginning, he's sort of a greaser. He's got his hair slicked back in a duck's ass. But at about 2/3 of the way through, suddenly he's gone hippie. So he's got sort of a Beatles bowl cut sort of thing going on.
Okay, so it went from 1966 to 1971.
66 to 71. Oh, so it's already on the air.
Yeah, it's already on the air.
Yeah. So, huh. So maybe it won't get written in.
No, maybe not. Sadly. But did you make little monster models when you were a kid and all that?
No, but I had I loved drawing them. I was also really fascinated by the Big Daddy Kane sort of, remember those hot rod cars, those cartoon hot rod cars that people would have airbrush on the sides of their van or on t-shirts?
Oh, yeah.
So I tried to make a whole bunch of those cars, based on the classic monsters. So I had a Frankenstein mobile. These are just things I would draw.
I remember that. Well, I wrote a play for the neighborhood called Dracula's Bones. No, yeah. The Bones of Dracula.
Ooh. And
we put it on for the neighborhood. I was very fascinated with monsters. Especially the vampire. That was my favorite.
Cool. They were cool.
Well, just like this little girl. And exactly. You know, maybe I was one day hoping I would become a vampire, I'm sure, at some point.
Yeah, you know, knock on wood, there's still time. Yes. So there's a lot. There's so much to talk about in this book, but you kind of feel like cut off at the knees because it's only half of the book.
Right. And like, what parts you're going to talk about?
Yeah. So we should just commit to when the second volume comes out, to snarf up a copy and round this out with a second discussion.
Okay. Well, did you like this book?
Very much.
Why did you like it very much?
Because it was just so it was, you know, page upon page over page to page. It was just beautiful to look at, which is for some people that's all you really need out of a graphic novel. You can have just a thin little storyline, but as long as the page turning is great, it's fantastic. But so this book had that. It had an aesthetic and a graphic style that was unlike anything I'd ever seen, and I'm not just saying it was all like really excellent drawings, because some of the drawings were really sketchy and half-assed seeming, but that too
kind of cartoonish.
Yeah, but that too is
very realistic.
Yeah, that too is very expressive.
Well, she drew D's, drawing a girl, and he looked pretty hot.
Yeah,
I was really into that cartoon D's. Let me tell you,
the girl was fine too.
I don't barely remember her.
I barely. But then the plot itself, and it's like we're talking about, you know, there's A plot, B plot, C plot, D plot. There's all kinds of these plots. We didn't even talk about, you know, the story about the ventriloquist and his struggles, or her struggles in school, or, you know, very much about the drag queen who lives in the building. All these plots are woven into this graphic novel, and they're pretty organic and they sync very nicely. Then you have a freaking Holocaust story in there as well, and an epic one, and it's all in this fat graphic novel with fantastic art.
I have to say, the other episode I liked in the story was when she was about to get kind of I mean, I didn't like this, right?
No.
But she was about to sort of get beaten up or molested by some of the kids in the school.
Yeah.
And this guy comes and kind of rescues her, and he's African American, and he's gay, and he's a kid, and he's got something,
right,
some kind of scars on his face or whatever, and she kind of turns him into Frankenstein.
Yes.
And they kind of have a little adventure with one of their other friends, and they go to the museum, and I really liked how she kind of integrated him in then as sort of the protector, friendly monster, and
And just the central part that the Chicago Art Institute plays in her, like, her life, and when somebody becomes important to her, she takes them there, and they look at pictures. And it's, and you find out a lot about her and about them just by what they look at and how they react to the paintings.
Yeah,
it's very cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. Well, I have a hankering for a cocktail.
It's
that time of day. It's before noon.
It's before noon. I've already worked out.
My breakfast cocktail. I guess it's cocktail time.
It is.
All right. So,
I'll tell you what.
What are you doing with this cocktail?
We'll see if our listeners can figure out what the name of this cocktail is in before we finish giving you the recipe.
Kind of ashamed.
So,
all right. So you get a glass.
Yes,
you get a glass, and you muddle some fruit at the bottom of it.
So, what precisely do you mean when you say muddle?
I would say take a little, like the back of a spoon, or
you sort of mash it. You mash it down.
Just kind of mash it down a little bit.
Yes, just mash
release
it.
Release some of the. I see what you're doing there.
Okay.
So you take like a little. You take like a piece of kiwi.
Uh-huh.
You take a blueberry. You take a strawberry.
Maybe a slice of peach.
Maybe. And there's one other one, but I can't remember what we put in there.
And just sort of mash it down.
Just kind of muddle it down or mash it down.
If you will.
If you want to do a little bit of sugar, maybe
do that. Sure.
And then you get the best
corn mash whiskey
that you can possibly find.
Yeah, well, you can spend thousands of dollars for the very best you can find, but, you know.
The best that you can find that you can afford.
Right. There you go.
Don't take out a mortgage on corn mash whiskey.
Stay away from the Pappy Van Winkle.
And then pour some ice over the muddled or the mashed fruits.
Yes.
Pour in your whiskey and stir it a little bit and drink it.
And so, listeners, what are we calling this?
We are calling it the Monster Muddle.
Oh, yes. Yep, but let's call it the Monster Muddle. I bet you people thought we were going to call it the Monster Mash. It is the Monster Mash.
And it's not bad. It's a lazy drink.
It's a lazy drink for a lazy Sunday.
But each of the fruits represent a monster. So you got the kiwi as the Frankenstein green.
Yep.
You get the Dracula as a strawberry for the blood. You get a blueberry for booberry.
And the peach for yummy mummy.
Yummy mummy.
And then whatever you want for the fruit.
And there might be any other. You could put raw chicken in there for a zombie.
Sure.
If that's your thing.
If that's your thing. I wouldn't do that.
The alcohol kills the salmonella.
Eventually.
So that's our drink.
All right. Chin chin.
All right. Well, we're done with that drink. So why don't we head on down to La Basement?
La Basement.
Hey, we're in La Basement.
It's a nice down here.
Yes. It feels like we were just down here a week ago.
We were just down here a week ago when we hemmed and hawed about what we were going to read.
But now we know.
Well, we're going to go back to vampires, which we haven't done in a while.
No, we haven't.
So I was inspired to read this book that is an early 90s Avon horror novel by John Peyton Cook called Out for Blood. And it's just been re-released by Valancourt Books as a lost classic of the skeezy 80s, 90s horror era. And I love those books. And it's time we read another one.
Yeah, I didn't know Avon did books and perfumes.
It's true. Well, see, when this Avon lady came to your door, it was a much different experience.
Wouldn't that be awesome? She comes to the door and opens up her little suitcase and there's all these little pocketbook horror books.
That would have been fantastic. I would have been so into that. So yeah, Out for Blood by John Peyton Cook, available from Valancourt. And you can find it used online. And there's also an audiobook version of it, which I will probably be enjoying.
Yes. All right. Well, that's the book. And we didn't do a lot of hemming and hawing, so let's get out of the basement. We're out of la basement.
Here we are.
Anything else about, you know, frankly, to our listener, the enthusiasm has disappeared because it was many weeks ago that we read it.
Yeah,
we have to re-record, and
yeah, that's just the way.
To my horror, I realize we have not recorded much this year. So, COVID
took us a while to get back on the horse and figure some stuff out. But now we're instead of face to face, we're in our own little corners of the world of Doppeltown.
It's not the same.
It's not the same. But anyway,
anything else you want to say? Of my favorite thing is monsters.
Not really. I'm glad we read it. I'm looking forward to reading it, the second one. I will reread this one before we get to the second one. Yes. And that's it.
That's it. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I liked it. Surprisingly, there was every page was packed.
Oh my God.
With either words or things to look at, and there were so many levels about survival and about how people are, how children are kept in the dark but still know things.
Yeah.
If they don't know things, they will fill them in with something else, probably even scarier.
Yeah.
And so it was. It made me glad that my family left the west side of Chicago. That's a sizzle.
Sizzle. Excellent. All right. Well, so what should we do with this one?
I think we should send it to the museum and just without a docent.
Without a docent.
And just let it roam around.
Exactly. We'll be back to pick it up in a year.
That sounds good.
All right. All right. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
With this world, it's an ugly one. You're an ugly girl. Problem with you, the problem. gotta stop.
One,